welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Today we are on a Smart Talk road trip to the 2019 Pennsylvania State Farm Show. Over the next hour, we'll discuss the state of agriculture in Pennsylvania, farm jobs and science, technology, engineering and math, and how it relates to agriculture. We always look forward to our road trip to the Pennsylvania Farm Show, and it's always a lot of fun because we have an audience here to watch the Smart Talk broadcast and hopefully participate in the Smart Talk broadcast. But just as I look up now, I see that we have a tour of students coming through. There's a lot of activity. If you've never been to the Pennsylvania Farm Show, if you're from central Pennsylvania, I'd be surprised if you've never been to the Farm Show. But if you've never been to the Farm Show, this is really, truly a central Pennsylvania experience, a Pennsylvania experience. And I encourage you to visit, whether it's today or for the rest of the week. It goes through Saturday. Joining us in the first segment of today's program is Dr. Robert Clark, Executive Director of the Commission for Agricultural Education Excellence. Dr. Clark, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also joining us is Shannon Powers. She is the Press Secretary for the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. Shannon, good to see you again.
It's great to be here, Scott. Thank you.
And let me also remind our audience that if you have a question or a comment, step right up to the microphone. We don't take phone calls during the broadcast today, but step right up to the microphone and you can ask a question or make a comment. All right, so here we are, 2019 Farm Show, and a lot of times when we're on this broadcast, we do this once a year, a lot of times we look at the state of agriculture in Pennsylvania. One of the major issues, one of the major challenges facing Pennsylvania right now is filling vacancies, filling jobs, filling careers in agriculture in Pennsylvania. Dr. Clark, how much of a challenge are we talking?
Well, I think probably the biggest challenge is making sure that our students in agriculture education programs are aware of what those career opportunities are and the level of career opportunities and the degree of education that's required for each one of those types of positions. You know, I think being involved with things such as the Pennsylvania Farm Show, or being involved with things such as Ag Progress Days or other related events, and having students touring and seeing and viewing and connecting with people is a wonderful way for them to understand what's possible or what's out there. I mean, and you know, when I visit and I see students in Ag Ed programs looking at their future, you know, there's so many possibilities for them. And so industrial niches within agriculture, I think, are things that kids or people may not know about until they have some direct experience with.
Mm-hmm. But the fact remains that mm-hmm. when we talk about the family farm, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about some other areas, careers and jobs as well, but when we talk about the family farm, there are a lot of young people who are deciding not to follow the family tradition and mm-hmm. become farmers. They have, you hear that one of the mm-hmm. reasons is that they have a lot of other options open to them. It's hard work. And, we've heard that often they don't want to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, milk the cows 3 times a day, mm-hmm. all those things. So let's start with that. Mm-hmm. Is that a real challenge right today, that there are many young people deciding not to follow in their father's, mm-hmm. mother's, grandparents' footsteps?
Well, one of the things we talk about at the commission and within other circles in agriculture education is the idea of the culture of agriculture. So what is the culture of agriculture? And for a long, long, long time, the culture of agriculture in terms of small towns, communities, and school districts across the state, you know, has been that family farm. And that culture has meant that projects that students have worked on, knowledge that they've gained, supervised ag experiences that they've had, emerge from a combination of family farm related experiences growing up with mom and dad and grandma and grandpa who are doing things together, connected with what they're learning in a school setting. And as you rightfully said, with many students electing or thinking about not going back to the family farm, then that creates a different scenario as to where students may begin to gain some knowledge or gain some experience in the agricultural industry outside of the family farm. And so you know, across the country, the number of farms are decreasing. You know, there are multiple issues affecting the family farm. I'm not an economics expert, but we all know about commodity prices changing. We know about issues related to the dairy industry. You know, we also know about, you know, issues with international trade. And so that puts students kind of in a unique situation because they need to find, and this is not a, no pun intended, but they need to find additional fertile ground in order to expand and explore interest in agriculture. So I think part of what Ag Ed's responsibility is to provide those experiences that kind of transcend or go beyond the family farm. Not saying the family farm isn't important, but recognizing that greater opportunities for growth within the agriculture industry may not be what they were 10, 15, 20 years ago.
There are so many people, I'm sure, that when they hear careers in agriculture, mm-hmm. the family farm is the first thing they think of. Mm-hmm. Shannon, you know, again, going back to that there are fewer young people who are deciding to follow that path actually on the family farm. But there are other careers out there. And the two of you can talk about this. What other careers are we talking about?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. That's part of what Farm Show is all about. We're talking about Pennsylvania's story, and it's the story of the agriculture and food industry, which is very broad. It touches every aspect of our lives. It is fiber, so the clothing you're wearing, I see you're wearing, it looks like a cotton shirt.
It is a flannel cotton shirt, another, yes.
A number of fibers that come from agriculture, including fibers we're researching, like hemp. Then there's fuel. In fact, the butter sculpture here this week will become fuel after this is over. Not fuel for your car, but that's corn. It will become electricity to power a community. So, and that's one of the ways that technology is changing agriculture, and the STEM world is very important. Preparing students with science, technology, engineering, and math, all of that goes into not just the family farm, but into the whole breadth of agriculture, from the seeds to the table, the transportation infrastructure that it takes to get the food to market and to feed the world. It's the whole gamut of agriculture, the controlling the pests that also want to eat what you want to eat.
Which is a huge issue today.
It's a giant, giant field. In fact, it has a $135.7 billion impact on Pennsylvania's economy
every
year.
That's just in Pennsylvania.
That is just Pennsylvania's agriculture and food industry. At last year's Farm Show, Governor Wolf and Secretary Redding introduced a study that really is the first time we've ever been able to quantify the impact of agriculture on Pennsylvania's economy.
And that goes to when you hear that agriculture is Pennsylvania's number one industry. Many people, again, go back to farming and think, well, there's only, between 2 and 4% of the people actually live and work on farms, but we're talking about the food industry, we're talking about transportation, talking about that science having to do with invasive species, whether it be plants or whether it be insects or other animals. Yeah, I want to get back to Dr. Clark had mentioned something that I want to provide a little bit of background on for someone who may not be familiar with. You said that everyone knows about the challenges facing the dairy industry. And I don't think we can assume that everyone does, because the dairy industry, you know, we've focused on this on our program several times, but the dairy industry, which, you know, is one of the biggest aspects of agriculture here in Pennsylvania, has faced some challenges here. People are drinking less milk.
Absolutely.
We know that we had an issue with Canada and exporting dairy products to Canada as far as tariffs that were concerned. So if you would, talk about those challenges that dairy farmers in particular are facing.
You're pointing to me. Dairy is near and dear to our hearts in Pennsylvania. That's one reason we do the butter sculpture and the Choose PA Dairy campaign. Dairy is a really complex industry, and the pricing has been very uncertain and very unstable in the past few years. Consumer tastes are changing. So, yes, they are drinking less fluid milk. And getting dairy farmers to adapt to that, they have faced unbelievable challenges. Changes in the supply chain, you name it. They have faced that challenge. They're already in an uncertain industry. The production farming in general is affected by the weather, like it has been this year.
Well, and we know that this has been the year, well, not this, 2018, let's hope 2019 isn't, the year of the rain.
The year of rain,
and,
yes.
And you know, most people, again, would probably think of that as being a good thing for farmers, but it hasn't necessarily been because of getting out in the fields, having the opportunity to do that. One other question I'll ask you, Shannon, about that before I get back to Dr. Clark when we're talking about careers and education. I mentioned invasive species. There's been a lot of attention on the spotted lanternfly. What are some of the other invasive species that farmers are having to deal with here in Pennsylvania?
We don't talk about them as much in the winter, but absolutely, there is a whole gamut of invasive species that sometimes come over from other countries unintentionally. Sometimes people bring them here. They don't belong here, so we don't know how they're going to act. So
we don't know how they're going to act.
We don't know how they're going to act. So there's a whole science behind controlling them in this environment and in a changing environment. One we talked about a lot earlier was giant hogweed, which can burn your skin. It has legitimate culinary uses, but just needs to be controlled. We've done a great job at controlling that.
See, Dr. Clark, one of the reasons I wanted to have Shannon talk about those things is that this all goes back to what you're trying to do with educate students. You know, one thing I neglected to ask, and probably is a good thing to ask, is the Commission for Agricultural Education Excellence, which you are the new executive director. Right. Governor Wolf appointed this commission. What exactly does the commission do?
Well, the commission has multiple powers and duties. But the commission was created as a way to make some plans for the future and recognize that the field of agriculture and education is changing, and this is composed of 15 representatives from business and industry, family farms, higher education, PASHI system, all across the board,
state system of higher education, that's correct, to
come together and investigate agriculture education as a whole. Look at ag programs in Pennsylvania, across the country. Look at technology, how technology's changed. Look at the way career and technical education, of which ag is a part of, is funded, and how dollars flow to ag programs, and to investigate and make recommendations as to how we might move forward in ways that could make changes for the better.
What have you found so far?
Well, we had one meeting last week.
Ah!
Our inaugural meeting was this past Friday over here at the Department of Agriculture. A phenomenal meeting. The commission is co-chaired by Secretary of Agriculture Russell Redding and Secretary of Education Pedro Rivera. Both of these gentlemen are immensely supportive of what the commission will be doing. So we're going to be creating a program of work. And the program of work is going to inform the commission of all these many issues, some of which we're talking about today, so they might make policy recommendations. We want to assist agriculture educators in operating their programs the way they're established. We want to assist them in making sure they're meeting national agriculture education standards. We also want to assist them with their FFA activities and their supervised agricultural experience programs. I mean, in my experience here at the Farm Show and others, I mean, I've actually seen some beautiful and amazing projects that FFA students have created through their Supervised Ag Experience program that represent, as I said earlier, the foundation of that career launching pad, so to speak. So the commission is deeply committed to investigating and coming up with recommendations as to how, you know, secondary, post-secondary ag ed might meet some of these challenges that you're talking about.
You just listed a lot of things, but is there an area where we are, and when I say we, and I'm talking about education across Pennsylvania, and I assume we're talking mostly about public education, mm-hmm. where we are lacking, is it on the radar in curriculums in schools to talk about these
excellent
things?
Excellent question, because one of the charges of the commission is to create a statewide ag ed curriculum, is to create a statewide model ag ed curriculum that can be adopted and implemented across the state. And the reason that became an issue is that throughout the state, different communities have different priorities. And different community priorities might mean an ag program in one part of the state that looks a little different than an ag program in the other part of the state. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but the state's attempting to provide some broader leadership in terms of what a statewide model curriculum ought to be or might need to be. And I'll give you an example of something. The National Council for Agriculture Education approximately 10, 12 years ago embarked on this new curriculum called the Curriculum for Ag Sciences Education. Pennsylvania is a part of that. The entire state has not adopted it, but many ag teachers across the state have. So that's an example of a national curriculum that the commission will be looking at, will be investigating, and seeing how it, through plant science, animal science, biotechnology, et cetera, may be applied here in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So that's just one step, and we may end up getting curricular input from a variety of other sources.
Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about careers in agriculture in just a moment and agriculture-related industries. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. It's a Smart Talk road trip, and Smart Talk road trips are supported by Roof Advisory Group. We're always very thankful to have and appreciative of Roof Advisory Group for sponsoring Smart Talk road trips, which we have these road trips about once a month. Actually, this month, we're going to have two of them. Another one coming up a little bit later in the month at Franklin and Marshall College. So stay tuned, and we'll let you know where how you can participate in that. Joining us today is Shannon Powers, press secretary with the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. Dr. Robert Clark is the executive director of the Commission for Agricultural Education Excellence. And joining us now is Scott Sheely. He's a special assistant for workforce at the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. And Mr. Sheely, let me turn to you now. We were talking about education, establishing that foundation for careers in agriculture. And we pretty much also established that there are vacancies out there, jobs, careers. Can you give me a sense of what we're looking at as far as the kind of jobs, the kind of careers that have to be filled?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. We have done quite a bit of research over the last 3 or 4 years, really looking at the agriculture workforce and trying to break down exactly what you're talking about. Where are the different opportunities that are available? And kind of what we've come up with is that it's, if you think of the workforce as a pyramid, that we have sort of three levels that actually develop. At the top, we have the scientists, the engineers, the managers. These are the people that everybody talks about, that they go to Penn State or Del Valle, they get the agriculture degree.
Delaware Valley College.
Mm-hmm. They may go on for a graduate degree, that kind of thing. It's very important for us to keep the pathways that lead to those careers open, and we're always concerned because the same folks that are in those pathways are also being recruited by many other industries as well. But that's a small part of the overall workforce. In the middle is where we're seeing most of the change. This is where many of these the jobs that were technical jobs are being reinvented by science, technology, engineering, and math. We have jobs, for example, that are jobs of the past that are now have a technology or a new technology component. People that fix these tractors over here, for example, it's not just a toolbox anymore, but it's a laptop that they use.
Tractor, just so I'm clear on this, a tractor has as many computerized parts as an automobile today?
And actually has, in many, some of the big machines have 6 or 7 onboard computers that whenever anything stops, they all have to be reprogrammed and such. The technician has to do that. So they also have GPS. Many tractors can be, they don't necessarily need a driver. So who's going to do that work and how are we going to train them? This is where Dr. Clark's talking in the K-12 world, but we need to also be thinking about after high school. And here's a place where we don't necessarily have as many resources as we would like to in Pennsylvania. So the department is spending a lot of time talking with people in the industry about how do we develop those resources. We can't forget the bottom layer of our production part of the workforce as well. These are the people who are actually doing the work on the farms, they're doing the work in the packing houses. You know, they are the very, very large production workforce that in many cases has quite a few people who are foreign-born workers. And the issue of how do we involve those folks, how do we bring them into career pathways, how do we do training for them? We may have to do the training in a bilingual format. Just how would that all proceed? We need to make sure that that is a place where we recruit in the pathways that lead to these other levels.
I jump around with something you just mentioned. So is immigration a big issue in Pennsylvania when it comes to agriculture?
It is a big issue, but it's really the guest worker part of that, which is not necessarily people who are immigrating here to become citizens, but people who are coming here to work. We have a variety of seasonal industries that use a great number of guest workers, and yes, that is an incredibly big issue right now.
Looking down through the list of careers and occupations, jobs that are needed out there, you mentioned several, but there are others that maybe everyone doesn't think of. Forestry, landscaping, those are things that, I've heard so many people over the years say, oh, I would love to be a forester. You know, I'd love that job, going out in the woods every day and, you know, working that kind of thing. But these are the kind of jobs that are needed, right?
Right, and we have to remember, it's not just the people who are producing the product where we need folks to fill occupations, but we also do a lot of food processing in the area. So most people have never heard of a food batch maker, for example.
Yeah, what is that?
It's kind of like a chef who does the ingredients in big bags instead of by teaspoons. Does the mixing, in the where they make the little goldfish and that kind of thing. I mean, these are jobs that have skill sets that are very transferable to other occupations, like chefs, like in the culinary world, for example, with a food batch maker. But we also see, like, reinvention of, for example, veterinary medicine. In the same way that we have in human medicine, we have medical assistants, we have veterinary assistants, we have veterinary technicians, who in many cases can do some of the work of a veterinarian, but not necessarily have extra four-year graduate education, that kind of thing.
And when you're talking about veterinary services, you're talking about as it relates to agriculture, to farming.
Absolutely.
Large animals. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember that there's actually a need for the large animal vets more so than the vet who where you take your pet dog, right, or your pet cat, correct?
Yeah, everybody wants to do puppies and kitties, but we actually need people to do pigs and cows and some of the other animals as well. But our overall number, I mean, I think this is kind of what you were getting to. The department has put out a number of somewhere around 75,000 new and replacement jobs in the next 10 years, just in agriculture, just in Pennsylvania. And when you look at those numbers, the kind of things that Dr. Clark is talking about, as far as career pathways, how do we keep people in those? How do we attract veterans? How do we attract, people who are retiring, for example? How do we develop other career pathways so that we can actually find those kind of numbers here in Pennsylvania to meet the needs that we have in the workforce?
Okay, here's a question that, let's face it, that the career that someone chooses, there are a couple things. They want to be happy. They want to be productive. They also want to make money. Mm-hmm. Are these the kind of careers where all those things can be, all those goals can be met?
Absolutely, and again, there's a lot of misinformation out there, but people who are picking apples in South Central Pennsylvania, are making a wage somewhere around $18 an hour. Now, that it could be better, but that's not minimum wage. I mean, that is way above minimum wage. And, so I think that we have an education task. We have to begin telling people, we have to continue telling people about agriculture careers and that there are great opportunities there, but also opportunities for advancement. You know, many people have come into the industry. The industry hires from within. They have moved up into other occupations. I think where we we have kind of figured out we need to spend some more time is with people who need training to be able to do the advancement piece that may not be in high school, but how do we do that for adults? You know, and that's another part of the education and training piece.
Obviously, the two of you go together with what we're talking about here. I mean, education is a huge part of this, but people have to know that there are opportunities out there. How do you get the word out, Dr. Clark?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there
okay,
you go.
Good, thank you. I was listening to Scott talk about that, and what was going through my mind was that very question that you were asking, is that all of these things exist. You talked about the opportunities, the potential for obtaining a career in an ag industry across the spectrum. But the question becomes, how do we get the word out beyond people who are innately and already interested in the field? And I think that's a challenge. I think that's a heck of a challenge. And I believe that again, I'm going back to my role as the executive director of the commission here, is that that's one of the things that we need to look at is how do we do that? How do we promote what agriculture is in a K-12 setting? It's not that we're trying to, you know, channel first graders into a job, but how do we make that connection? What's that?
They could pick apples.
That's right. how do we create experiences that lead them to make conclusions about the agricultural industry and opportunities that are accurate? That are accurate and appropriate. I'm just going to give you one example. I was judging some awards yesterday for the FFA Midwinter Convention, and we had an award applicant who was deeply involved in raising chickens and some livestock, and was involved in a project with his grandfather in doing this. But in addition, this young man also was attending the CTC, and he was taking...
Tech.
That's right. He was attending the CTC, and he was taking metal fabrication work, and he has a cooperative education experience job where he works with a company that gives him hands-on experience. So here he is, has an ag interest over here, and he's carrying it out, and then he has another industrial-related interest over here, and as a... What I see as a potentially young entrepreneur... It may figure out ways to fuse these two together at some point. Take this interest and bring them together. And by being able to do that, that young man is going to be sought after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Scott, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I think that it's really important to mm-hmm. say that while mm-hmm. formal education in the K-12 system is mm-hmm. probably one of our most important career pathways that we have out there, we need to make sure that we remember that there are other paths mm-hmm. for people coming into ag careers. We're doing quite a bit of work right now with veterans, for example. Many people who have been in the military have skill sets mm-hmm. that are immediately applicable in the ag world. We have the possibility of people who are retiring, who are, you know, looking for second careers, who are in many cases driving a lot of our boutique farming, you know, where mm-hmm. we have specialty crops and that sort of thing. There's a variety of ways that we have to deal with the issue of the guest worker, because we need those folks involved in the workforce. The solution to the problem of 75,000 new and replacement jobs in the next 10 years is going to come from a variety of ways. Education, formal education is one part of it, but we also need to make sure that the informal education, the education we do for adults, is just as important in our priorities.
I want to thank the three of you for being with us today. This was, during this segment, it was fascinating to find out. This is the kind of information that a lot of people probably aren't aware of unless they are involved in the industry. So getting that word out is a good thing. Dr. Robert Clark, Executive Director of the Commission for Agricultural Education Excellence. Shannon Powers is the Press Secretary for the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. Scott Sheely is the Special Assistant for Workforce at the Department of Agriculture. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Nice. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. It's a Smart Talk road trip at the Pennsylvania Farm Show 2019. And Smart Talk road trips are supported by Roof Advisory Group. We just talked about the careers in the agriculture industry and those related. Something that it's a big deal here at the Farm Show today, that today is STEM Day. at the Pennsylvania Farm Show. Science, technology, engineering, and math. And I'm going to throw another letter in there, STEAM as well, the arts. That is something you're hearing much more about in today's world, the arts involved in that as well. And we have three people here to talk about how they are involved in STEM and STEAM here at the Pennsylvania Farm Show. Bill Jester is the mentor of the Center County 4-H robotic team, and Zach Jester, I assume that father, son?
Yes.
Okay. Zach is a high school senior and president of the 4-H robotics team in Center County. Thank you for being with us today.
It's our pleasure.
Also joining us with the Mars Challenge is Mary Snow. And Mary, welcome to the program. We're going to be talking about the Mars Challenge in just a moment as well. First, let's talk about robotics. And first, when we talk about the 4-H robotics team in Center County, I have to say congratulations right off the bat, because your robotics team is a national champion.
World champion
out of how many different competitors?
Roughly 3,600 teams each year.
3,600. Now, where was this championship held?
So this was in Detroit, Michigan, in late April.
Okay, so what exactly, I'll start off with what the robotics team does, and then we'll go to the championship, how you were able to win. What does the Center County 4-H robotics team do?
Yeah, so we actually have three different programs now for different age ranges. We have a fourth and fifth grade elementary team, a middle school team, and then the high school team, which is the one that that we're representing here mostly. And we compete in various levels of what's called the FIRST Robotics Competition, in addition to doing different outreach and education opportunities within the Center County region. So our goal is really just to expose as many kids from a diverse background across our county to the real practical hands-on STEM education through using robotics as a platform.
All right, now give us a few more details, some specifics as to what those who are on the team actually do with robotics. I mean, do you start from scratch and work your way up?
Yeah, so in the high school team, for instance, we have a build season that actually just kicked off this last Saturday. So we're kind of just right on the precipice of a new season here, and we have 6 weeks from when the new game rules are announced to build about 130-pound robot from scratch, build it, program it, test it, and we really try to, the mentors like myself, just stay out of the way and let the students lead every part of that project. So they're learning all these skills kind of from cover to cover across the project.
So, Zach, let's go back to last year. Tell me what that's like. How many members were on the team, by the way?
So last year we had around 20, 25 members on the team. We've expanded a lot this year, but last year was around 20 to 25 active members of the team.
Everyone wants to jump on the world champion bandwagon.
Yeah.
So tell me what it was like last year when the 20 of you got together and the first time and said, all right, what are we going to do here? What was it like brainstorming, coming up with an idea?
Yeah, so last year the game we had to do last year was we were picking up these milk crates from around the field and stacking them in various locations to score points. And so very early on in the season, we identified we want to be able to stack them really, really high. There was this like really high shelf you could place them on for a more valuable scoring method. So we decided we would try to do that. And we just went through, evaluated all of our options for how to get it up there. Do we shoot the cubes up there? Do we pick them up with a forklift? Do we use an articulated arm? And we went with a forklift style arm that could pinch them from the outside and then just lift them up 9 to 10 feet and drop them in various locations. And then we decided on that design roughly 2 weeks into the season. And then for the remaining 4 weeks, bought all the parts, cut them all to the correct sizes, assembled it.
So you did everything. What powers the robot, by the way?
So it's a 12-volt lead-acid battery, and it's running through a mostly National Instruments-based control system. I know they do a reasonable amount of agricultural control systems, too, and like factory lines for processing foods and stuff, too.
So I can see, and I'm sure our audience can see, too, the practical implementation of this. I mean, when you talk about milk crates, there's a lot of different materials on a farm or in agriculture, food production, almost any kind of manufacturing where that can be used. All right, so let's move to Detroit and the World Championship. What was the goal there? What did you have to do to win the competition?
Yeah, so it was a similar, the same game as we had earlier in the season. So in each round, you're matched with two other teams competing against an alliance of three teams. So it's actually a 3-on-3 play. At Detroit, our goal going into Detroit, because we qualified by winning the Pittsburgh regional that we were at. Once we got to Detroit, we realized the competitive standard there was much higher. So our goal was to place reasonably well and hopefully make it to the playoffs. We ended up getting drafted as an alternate by the number two team in our division, which they were the world champions of the last year, actually. And there was a fault in one of our teammate robots, so that we were swapped in place of them, and they left us in for most of the remainder of the tournament. There was one match where we swapped back out, but after that we were back in for all of the later playoffs and the championship match itself.
So what did you do to win and lose? Was it just sheer number of crates that you're able to stack, or what?
So it was a combination of where you place them, when you place them. It was kind of a King of the Hill-based style of game, so if you had more cubes on the platform than the opponents did, then you would get 1 point per second. So it was all about taking control of the central platform and the two smaller ones and holding them. Mm. And at the end game, it's something we didn't do much in the qualifiers, but in the end game, you're actually able to grab onto a bar on the platform and climb. And we didn't have the mechanism to do that, but one of our teammates actually had this system where they would grab onto the bar, and then we would drive onto their robot, and they would climb with both of us for bonus points.
Wow, this is amazing. It really is. Well, congratulations again. And Bill, let me ask you, as the mentor of this team, what experience do you want the students to get from this? I mean, we were just talking about careers in the ag industry. It doesn't necessarily have to be an ag, but it could be. What experience do you want them to get out of this?
Yeah, it's interesting. Last year's graduating class, we had, I think, 8 seniors who left the program. They were seniors and graduated. And I think about half of them are pursuing STEM-based careers. They were students that, kind of with or without this program, they were passionate about engineering, and you sort of knew that was the trajectory they were on. But we had other students, so some that came in without much of an interest, and by participating in the club through 3 or 4 years, became interested in it. There's a girl who's a freshman at Princeton studying engineering there. Mm-hmm. But we also have had a lot of students, you know, we talked about the A in STEAM as well, and their interest was more on the design and the aesthetic side. And so they were involved more in making the robot look good. We want a robot that looked good, that had some style points as well. And so our goal is really for students to come in and kind of whatever their passion is, to find a way to use it. Even if it's not even building the robot, but helping us develop business plans, reach out to local businesses who we're dependent on for our funding, things like that. So hopefully everybody has, really what they're doing there is a microcosm of what they'll do in any career, mm-hmm. That they're going to be, you know, maybe building things or making a sales pitch to somebody or, you know, designing things. They're all skills that I think will complement what they're learning in school and set them on a good trajectory into whatever they do, college, trade school, and careers beyond.
Mary Snow is also with us. And when we're talking about robotics, Mary is with the Mars Challenge. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell me what the Mars Challenge is.
So I live in the town called Mars.
Pennsylvania.
It's in Pennsylvania. It's near Pittsburgh. So you guys were only about 20 minutes from it when you did your competition in Pittsburgh. The Mars Challenge is a way to really start thinking about us living on the planet Mars and start asking questions of what does that look like? How will we function and what will we do? On my end of the committee, I own a junkyard. So There's a lot of material there. And I have 2 degrees in teaching. So I'm a sucker for a committee. So they love to put me on committees. And as part of the Mars New Year committee, NASA decided to come in and they brought all kinds of educational program and it really amped our robotics end up and a few other things. But the Mars Challenge is a competition that this year is offered through 1st through 8th graders. to come in and start asking questions. You get to pick the question. What does this look like on Mars? What does growing food look like? What does fashion look like? What does government look like? What does money look like? We decided to really focus on what art looks like. And in our personal opinion, art would be recycled materials. You would take your old obsolete technology and then create artwork out of it, because that will then be a resource, because you're not running to Walmart to pick up a paintbrush and paints. So you have to start thinking about those questions.
By the way, it should mention that Mary and Mars Challenge is going to make it making an onstage presentation right after us at 10 o'clock here on the same stage. So what did you come up with? What did the Mars Challenge come up with? What will art look like with those recycled materials look like on Mars?
Well, and if you stay for the next part, I have some visuals, but this being radio, basically right now, if you think about the things that we use, even using this broadcast system, using telephones, back in the day, there was a crank telephone, and then there was the rotary dial, and then there was the grab your, you're not attached to the wall anymore, you now have the portable phone. Right. And then there is the cell phone.
Was yours ringing right there?
Mine was just ringing right
there.
You didn't plan that, did you? No,
okay.
I did not plan that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
So since those will be obsolete on that planet, we will dismantle those to create our artwork. Back in the day, we had those 4-inch floppies. Then there was the 2-inch hard disks. And now it's a zip driver. There's just enough cloud magic memory in the air that we don't need all of those things. So what will we do with them? And hopefully we won't do as much wasting on that planet. We will want to use more, especially even with like 3D printing coming out, being able to grind it down and reuse all that material.
How does this connect to kids in STEAM?
The Mars Challenge? Well, so what we have is the town of Mars, M-A-R-S, Mechanical, Agricultural, Relationship, and Survival. We broke it down to those. That would relate to kids going into it by allowing them to explore the new questions of going on into space. What kind of questions would you have? How do you talk to your mom? When you're that far away, what is it that you can do to reconnect to where you're from? It takes 128 to 333 days to get to Mars, depending on how much fuel you want to use. So that's almost between 6 months and a year. What will you be doing in all that time when you're sitting there and you're used to going on Facebook and all social media and other things, and you've run out of that? Now what? The art branch that I personally am focusing on is a way to, like, relax. You're not going to be able to play kickbox and soccer, but you can create a robot that maybe can make something for you.
This is so fascinating. I want to thank the three of you for being with us. Mary Snow with the Mars Challenge, Bill and Zach Jester with the Center County 4-H Robotic Team. Congratulations to all of you, and really get people thinking and young people thinking about the future. Thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's our pleasure.
And we are at the Pennsylvania Farm Show, the 2019 edition of the Pennsylvania Farm Show for a Smart Talk road trip. We have a nice crowd here, and we only have a few minutes left in the program. We kind of want to get an update. We often talk about the kind of like the status of the state of agriculture in Pennsylvania at the Farm Show. I wanted to take a few minutes to do that with Mark O'Neill from the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Scott.
So let me ask that broad question. What is the state of agriculture in Pennsylvania? And that's the broadest question of all.
Well, if you're asking what is the future, farmers are extremely optimistic about the future. They think there's plenty of opportunities for them to grow. But I have to tell you, 2018 was one of the most difficult years for farmers across the board. Weather had a big part to do with it. I mean, it was the wettest weather that most of our farmers have been around for 50, 60, 70 years. They say overall it was the wettest winter we ever had. Caused problems with planting, growing, and harvesting. Yields were way down. that was obviously very bad. We've also had depressed prices for major commodities, corn, soybeans, things like that. The dairy industry, a lot of people use the word crisis. Prices have been down for the last 4 to 5 years, very difficult to try to make a living, what have you. And then, of course, we've had some issues with tariffs that have hurt some of our farmers as well, retaliatory tariffs. So it's been an extremely difficult time. But during our annual meeting in November, farmers from all across the state were there, and somehow they have a positive attitude. They think things are going to turn around. They're hopeful they'll turn around sooner rather than later. But there is that optimism. They feel there's a market for their products, and that's the big key. They want to be able to produce products and get it out to the public where they can make some money but also provide fresh quality food as well.
Well, let's talk about the tariffs. I mean, because we kind of addressed the dairy issues earlier in the program. I know this is it's an ongoing news story, if you will, and it involves a lot of different industries in this country and around the world. But when it comes to how Pennsylvania farmers have been impacted by tariffs, and mostly with China, I would assume, how have Pennsylvania farmers been impacted?
Well, basically, if you go to sell your soybeans for $10.50 a bushel one day, and then a couple days later you can only sell it for $8 a bushel, that's how it affects you. It's right off the bottom line where when you go to sell it, you're not getting anywhere near. You know, you're looking at a 20%, 25% reduction, and the 10.50 number was enough to make money, but not make a lot of money to begin with. So, you know, because those prices have been going down for several years as well. But dairy was also affected by this with China. A lot of our cheese actually goes to Mexico. I mean, there's a number of different factors, but it pretty much was pork, soybeans and dairy were the three biggest areas affected by tariffs and continue to be affected by tariffs.
You mentioned pork. Were any of the three, because I have heard a lot about pork recently with China, any of the three impacted more so than the others?
Well, soybeans has definitely been the biggest thing. Now, with President Trump met with President Xi a few weeks ago at the G20 summit, and basically an agreement was made that China was going to buy more of our soybeans. And they are buying more. How much more, we don't know. But we know that the price has improved a little bit since then. But we need to get back to a free market system. We need to stop this bickering and fighting, get back the way things were, and then look for improvements in the future. There is improvements in what I call the new NAFTA, the USMCA, but it's not in effect yet.
We only have a couple of minutes left, and I know I'm touching on some real important issues with you. Immigration. President speaks tonight. We've been in a shutdown here over the last 2 weeks over a wall being built. Immigration is a major issue for Pennsylvania farmers. In what way?
Well, a lot of our farmers depend on foreign workers to do the job, especially, you know, you go over the one side here, you've got apples and different things like, you know, we use a lot of them on orchards in Pennsylvania. We'd like to use more on dairy farms. We'd like to use more in our mushroom industry. Pennsylvania is the number one mushroom industry in the country by far. They have serious issues with finding workers. We've been supporting programs that would allow workers to stay year-long. Not just go back every 6 months or every 9 months.
So, and you're not advocating for open borders or anything like that. You're talking about worker visas, that kind of thing.
Exactly. We want a adequate legal workforce so that we can produce food here and sell it to people here who want fresh grown local food. You have to ask yourself the question, do you want food that's grown in another country and picked by workers in another country that is transported over here for purchase? Or do you want it grown here, picked by foreign workers, but grown here in America where America benefits from the production of that fruit and vegetables, doesn't have to travel as far, it's fresher, and the price is going to be lower?
Mark, we only have about 30 seconds left. I want to thank you for being with us today. You said that Pennsylvania farmers are optimistic. After what you just listed there, why are they optimistic?
Well, I'll tell you what. I didn't grow up as a farmer. I don't know why they are either. But they do see that there are a lot of markets available. People want their products. If they can produce the products, get it to the market in a fair way where people can buy it at a fair price, then they feel that they are going to make a product. The American food industry is basically, the world looks at our industry as being the best in the world, and we want to continue that.
Mark O'Neill with the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here, Scott.
A lot of information, a lot of good information from the 2019 Pennsylvania Farm Show, a Smart Talk Road Trip. I want to thank Roof Advisory Group. Should mention that tomorrow's program, we're going to be looking at the minimum wage in Pennsylvania.